Okay, listener, the following podcast was recorded on the morning of the 9th of April, 2025, which was the day after the initial tariffs that Donald Trump proposed came into force. Little did Matthew and I know while we were recording that the following day, the application of those tariffs would be delayed, or at least postponed at the time of this recording this preface on the following day. So a lot of Matthew's conversation he had with me would be covering the tariffs as they were implemented at the time, so perhaps more historical interest now, but although who knows what will happen in the future with if the tariffs return. Again, the market movements are now already out of date, but still maybe interesting to see what happened in that period. The second half of the podcast talked more about the impacts of the volatility on defined benefit pension schemes and defined contribution schemes. And so that is still relevant, I feel, and still could be interesting to the listener. So do still listen and enjoy the podcast, noting that we're doing these as fast as we can, but sometimes the world turns a little bit faster than we can to keep up. Enjoy. Hello and welcome to this episode of The Broadcast. My name is David Brooks. I'm head of policy here at Broadstone, and I'm joined by my colleague Matthew Downey, who is a senior investment consultant. We're going to be talking to you today about the Trump tariffs. We did have this earmarked as something else to talk about, but given what's been going on in the last sort of 8 days, I suppose, this feels like the topic that we cannot avoid talking about. So Matthew's going to take us through a number of open questions, the who, when, what, when, how, why, and so what of this stuff over the next 20 minutes or so, to give you everything you need to know about what's going on. Is that fair, Matthew? Have I said
that? It is, yeah. And okay. Hopefully answer the so what question as well for pension schemes, both defined benefits and defined contribution ones. So, yeah, that sounds
excellent.
Good.
Great. So let's start from the start. So, as all good stories, what and the when? So what's been happening and when did it happen?
So Liberation Day was announced on, trailed very, very heavily for over the last 6 months or more than that, probably. So 2nd of April, it was announced. The thing that shocked everyone, not just the markets, but commentators, was the scale and the breadth of it. People were expecting kind of an average of 10 or so, 10% tariffs. That obviously is the bare minimum. They vary from 10%, UK in the lucky situation of only 10% tariffs, up to 50%. And they were effective midnight last night US time, so kind of they are now effective as we speak. I know things change on a minute by minute basis, but as we speak, tariffs against China are at the giddy height of 104%. So yeah, that's a bit strange. 185 countries have been affected. I did read a little snippet that the countries, including the very well-known Heard and McDonald Islands, 4,000 kilometers off Australia. The reason that was picked out was because of they've got their own domain name. So it's they chose internet domain names rather than real countries to pick out. Okay.
I mean, I'm shocked. I didn't know that. I didn't know that's how they went through. Surely there's a better way of listing the countries of the world rather than just putting their domain names. Because I suspect their biggest export is, I don't know, penguin droppings? I don't know.
Probably guano, I think, is the
is that the technical name for it? Is it guano? Yeah. Okay. So you kind of summarised some of the who's in there. You're touching on some of the who's. So can you go in a bit more detail about sort of some of the potentials we're talking about, who's been affected?
Yeah, so we mentioned the UK, which has been affected by 10%, EU 20. So they're huge numbers, but those are obviously on the low end of the scale. It's the big exporters who have been most impacted. So thinking about Lesotho, it's kind of difficult to find it on a map, but it is the landlocked country within South Africa. So not many natural resources there. So they have to rely on trade, exporting goods. What they do is very low level textile manufacturing and exporting. They've been hit by a 50% tariff just north of their Botswana. 37% tariff. Why that? It's because they export diamonds. Are they, can they be placed in the US? Kind of difficult, but that's the, that's where we are at the moment. Interesting to look at kind of who is not on the list and what is not on the list. Russia is not on the list. Ukraine is. Ukraine has 10% tariffs. Russia, yeah, that they have some issues there about trade, but they're not on that 185 country list. Services are not on that list. It's just goods. Why are services not there? It's because the US runs a trade surplus on services. So accountancy firms, law firms, they don't want to affect those semiconductors. So chips, they're not on there. So they are manufactured elsewhere, kind of Taiwan, that kind of thing, shipped over to the US. Yeah, but they're not affected. So there is inconsistencies, let's put it that way.
And so how, I mean, I don't know if you can answer this actually, but how is this stuff actually applied in the real world? Do we know how that's done? You know, I'm not getting to the details, yeah. I suppose, of being a trade official.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not a customs official, but I worry about them over the next, their sanity over the next few weeks and months. Yeah. Looking at, okay, yesterday, the tariffs from X, Y, and Z countries were that, and they had doubled overnight. How that works out in practice is going to be very difficult. The implications are massive. So they're talking about stockpiling cars. What happens if a container ship is coming from, I don't know, China to the US? Does it park outside? Where does it park? All of those kind of things. I think the main thing is the uncertainty. So that is affecting markets and companies. So typically the way to negotiate with Trump, he starts very, very hard, and then you have a nice chat and you say, well, actually you can come to the UK and have a formal meeting with a king, all of that kind of stuff, and then he backs down. This time we don't know, and I think that is a huge issue. That the uncertainty is it going to last for days, weeks, months, or years? And companies cannot plan for that. So if you have to, if you run a multinational organization, company in the US, and have to create a whole new supply chain, those supply chains that you have currently got have been in the process for years, if not decades, in the making. So they're very intricate. They have potentially hundreds of different strands going into an iPhone, let's say. You could build a massive, great big factory in the US to make iPhones, but that would be very difficult. It is not going to be done in months. It is going to be done in years. And the issue is, it's going to be far more expensive to create these things in the US than they currently are.
So I suppose it brings us to the question of, maybe it was a question we probably could have answered earlier, but why? You know, why has Trump thrown this massive, I keep thinking of an analogy of like throwing a pebble into a pond sometimes, you know, just to mix things up. But he's trying like a breeze block into a paddling pond and really ripping up, as you're hinting at, you know, ripping up years of strategy, years of negotiated positions. You know, there's like Brexit, okay, that messed up, you know, trade between us and mainland Europe, and it makes things very messy. And the US seemed to be trying to do that to the whole world, and the implications, you know, for trade, and you know, like you're talking about supply chains, is going to affect, it will affect people in this country, it will affect people in every country somehow, some way. The cost of everything going up, you know, ultimately consumers will be paying more. And it just seems, unless I'm missing something, it does feels like a very confusing position. Unless, like you're hinting at sort of Trump's, sorry, I'm rambling now a little bit, but sort of Trump's sort of style of throwing things up in the air, or threatening to normally, but then actually now he's actually done it, thrown everything up in the air and gone sort of stare at the world and go, what are you going to do about it? You know, and it's that I'm kind of struggling with sometimes.
Yeah. So when it was announced on the 2nd of April, I did look and go, I don't quite understand the logic of this. And then I looked around and it seemed like the economists don't really understand the logic to this either. So that gave me comfort, but also fear. I think, in summary, he obviously wants to bring jobs to the US. He wants to eliminate the trade deficit. That's been stated many, many times. Possibly it is kind of recreating either the 1950s or even before then, the end of the 19th century, where there was very limited income tax and government spending was paid for by tariffs. The world is a very different place to 125 years ago. It's far more interconnected. You didn't buy toys from abroad at that time. So the world is far, far more complicated, far more interconnected now than it was beforehand. And I was trying to break this down and make sense to myself, because just to understand it. And like I mentioned before, you could build factories and create everything within the US, but it's not efficient to do so. So if you were, let's say, a partner at an accountancy firm and you had to do an audit, okay, you could do every single step yourself. You could go to all the meetings, write up the notes, check all X, Y, and Z, but that's not efficient. The most efficient thing to do is to get the juniors, the people who've been out of uni for a year or two, to do all the grunt work, the boring but important work, and then you oversee it. And that's kind of what the US is. It outsources or delegates in those terms, outsources the boring bit, the sticking labels onto clothes like they do in Lesotho, and then imports that. Again, you could do it in the US, but it would be far more expensive. Do people really want to do all of those boring, mundane jobs? Or are they better suited to do the higher value-adding work that they have been doing over the last few decades?
So thanks, Matthew. Let's just move on to some of the so whats. We did promise that at the start. So perhaps the sort of the so what as far as companies, how they and the economies, how they've been reacting.
Yeah. So companies. So we mentioned that manufacturing companies are going to be the hardest impacted. They currently, if they're based in the US, they import lots of stuff. Elon Musk has been impacted. I'm going to do a quote, and I'm trying not to do a rude quote, but it is, he called it dumber, or he called an individual dumber than a sack of bricks. So that's kind of how he sees it. And so that's one example, because he manufactures things, obviously. Looking at tech companies, those who like Facebook or Meta, they have been affected, but nowhere near as bad as Apple. Apple is a kind of poster child of how bad this has impacted US companies. They obviously manufacture their own products, but that manufacturing is done, 90% or so is done in China and Vietnam, which has also been massively impacted by these tariffs. So like I've mentioned a couple of times, they could create a factory in the US that would cost a huge amount of money. And it's not just building the factory, you'd have to train the staff. Where would you get all the raw supplies from? You'd have to import those. So it could be done, but at vast expense, and it would take years. So that's looking at the companies. What the so what on the economy? It again depends on how long this will go on for. Is it a short-term negotiation tactic and people back down, which Trump wants everybody to do and give him what he wants? But if it stands at the moment with the 104% tariffs and the huge range of tariffs, in short, prices will rise for US consumers. People have been talking about clothes, the price of clothes rising by a third. That obviously is inflation. So that will have a huge impact. There is already priced into the markets a greater chance of recession, but there's also the secondary impacts as well. So if, let's say, exporters from China or the Far East, they cannot sell profitably in the US, where are they going to sell their products? They're going to sell them in the EU or UK. That is going to undercut their prices, and that is going to impact, which sounds like a good thing. People get cheaper products, but it is going to undercut the producers, the local producers. So it's going to have those secondary impacts as well.
Oh, yeah. I was actually nodding, thinking, you actually read my mind. I was thinking, well, that doesn't sound too bad. But yeah, I suppose where those areas where we're importing from the same place, you know, the world, whether that will offset slightly, but it's going to be mixed. You could tell I was getting out of my depth there. I sort of bailed out that sentence. Anyway, we'll move back onto you, Matthew, because you're the expert here. So we need to talk about markets, because that's what everyone sees. That's what everyone sees with their, you know, their proverbial pension. You know, everyone's suddenly looking at their pension pots and worrying about what the ups and downs are, and obviously for DB schemes. We'll get on to the impacts of these in particular in a second, but can you just talk us through what you've been seeing in the various indices and markets?
Yeah. So obviously in the last week or so, it has been very volatile. And people say, oh, it's gone down by 9%. That's the FTSE 100, or 11%, the S&P 500. The S&P 500, as a reminder, is the biggest 500 companies in the US. So it's gone down by give or take 10%, depending on the day or the hour. So it's a correction. It is that those indices are back to where they were about a year ago. So it is bad, but it is nothing like global financial crisis, dot-com boom, Black Monday from 1987, those kind of things. So they are okay. Big, but they are, not in those scales yet. Cool. So that's equities. People talk about that, but for final salary pension schemes, at least, that is a small part, usually 5-10% of their allocations. We'll get onto the defined contribution pensions a bit later. Gilt yields, they have risen slightly, but they are still lower than they were at the start of the year in January.
Okay.
So, and gilt yields are important because they obviously look at they impact the discount rate on the future liabilities of the pension scheme. So if you've got £1 million to pay out in 10 years' time, the discount rate is based off gilt yields, or the income you get from a government bond. So take it to extremes. If that gilt yield is zero, it was pretty much zero over during COVID, then if you had to pay out £1 million in 10 years' time, you have to put aside now the present value of that that future liability. You had to put aside £1 million. So liabilities shot up. Take it to the other extreme. If gilt yields rise substantially, then you put away much less. The present value of your future liabilities is less. So you could say, okay, increasing gilt yields is a good thing. That is overall true. The problem is when you come into a 2022 Liz Truss scenario and gilt yields shot up. And the reason for that is lack of trust in the market. And that is a big, big issue. We are potentially seeing that in the US. And that is the one thing that is worrying, that the equity markets, they ebb and flow, and 10% is bigger than normal, but it is not enormous. The potential issue is when the market loses faith with the US financial system. And that is I don't even need to say that. That is a huge issue. That is a huge issue. Yeah. So it is having a knock-on effect on UK gilt yields. Today, gilt yields are rising slightly. Again, these are 0.2 of 1%. So they are nothing like what we saw 2-3 years ago in the Liz Truss era. Another thing that will impact pension schemes is corporate bonds, and more specifically, the credit spread. And I will explain the credit spread. So credit spreads are the additional income investors want to invest in a risky asset. So if you invest in government bonds, there is zero percent chance of default. There is some chance of default on a corporate bond. And for that, you need some compensation. And that ebbs and flows over time. So up until recently, that additional income, that additional yield has been very, very low. The credit spread has been very low. And it has expanded with this additional uncertainty. But the issue is that it is, by historical standards, it is still very low compared to, again, over COVID, global financial crisis. It's nothing like we saw then. So equities, gilt yields, and credit spreads, corporate bonds, the pricing of corporate bonds, those are the kind of the key components of a final salary pension scheme assets. And those, in summary, is what we have seen over the last week or so.
So can you expand a little bit on the impacts on pension schemes then? So, excuse me. So I think we'll start with DB, sort of DB schemes. You know, what should trustees be thinking about when they're looking at the back page of the FT and worrying about this stuff? Sorry, not back page. This would be front page.
Back page. I don't think they're looking at the sports bit, but you know.
Yeah, I'd actually do the sports bit, isn't the FT? I think they bury in the middle these. Anyway, sorry.
Okay, so don't rush. Don't rush into action. That's the main thing. So the gilts crisis from 2022 is probably a wake-up call. And since then, hopefully, trustees will have looked at their governance, looked at their asset allocation, and made particular changes. The key things to look at are hedging. Are they protecting the interest rate and inflation component of their assets? Is that enough? Have they looked at it? Have they reviewed it recently? And hopefully they have over the last couple of years. LDI collateral is a key thing to look at. So we saw, again, during the gilts crisis, if yields shoot up because of the leverage, because of the borrowing they have in the liability-driven investment funds, they need extra cash. Where do they get that extra cash from? It depends on particular pension schemes, but it could be growth assets or it could be cash. So the thing is that over the last 2.5 years, the liability-driven investment funds themselves are far, far more resilient than they were during the previous crisis. So even if yields did spike by up to 1%, which is unlikely but possible, then there would be collateral calls, there would be requests for money, but it wouldn't be anywhere near as rapid and scary as it was in 2022. So those are things that the trustees should look at. Another thing to look at is actually the employer covenant. So if your employer, the sponsoring employer for the pension scheme, is a big exporter to the US, then you should have a look at it and to say and ask the question, are you impacted? How badly are you impacted? We saw that Jaguar Land Rover has paused exports to the US. So if I was a trustee of the Jaguar Land Rover pension scheme, then that would be a very firm question that I would ask the employer.
Can I just ask you about the collateral waterfalls though? Because then a question that leads to my head is if your equities are going down and you're going to use those, you're sort of selling at a bad time. You know, are there alternative ways, or is that just that might just be the way it is?
So what has happened over the last few years is that there has been a step between, because you're totally right. A few years ago, people would sell growth assets, either corporate bonds or equities, at pretty much the worst time. So in times of stress, if there is a huge amount of uncertainty, equity markets fall, the value of bonds fall, and then you're selling at that point. What we have advised people to do, trustees to do, is to put a cash buffer in there. So cash is, it's not like cash in the bank, but it is very, very short-term bonds, like 3 week duration, literally. So it's very, very short duration. You can, they're very liquid. You can sell those with, and the aim is not to lose money when you sell. And so that is typically the first port of call when disaster strikes, but that would be a bit panic inducing. So when yields spike.
Yeah, when you need it. Okay, Matthew, before we move on to some of the DC bits, we haven't forgotten the DC element. So I just wanted just to pause for a second and just almost from a, I can hear my lay trustee friends saying, how do we sort of weave a path through this when we're thinking about the risk that's inherent with our asset allocation? We talk about VaR numbers, we talk about 1 in 20 risk. And these, again, you can accuse me of having a sort of a present day bias, but in recent memory, and I won't list them, but we can all list them, I suppose. I can think of events that felt like 1 in 20 events. These felt like, you know, these were big shocks on the markets, big shocks on my pension fund, and they seem to happen more often than one every 20 years. So, you know, how would you talk down a trustee who's feeling slightly exasperated by all this, this sort of noise that happens a lot when you, it's hard enough as it is without all these kind of big bumps in the road?
So I do think that the 24-hour news networks, I'm not going to blame them, but they do exacerbate the noise that is around at the moment. There is a huge amount of noise talking about the market shocks, and it is from all sides. So the 24-hour news, the social media on your phone, you look at your tracker on your phone on a minute-by-minute basis, which wasn't around. Maybe 5 years ago it was, but 10, 20 years ago it definitely wasn't. And looking at behavioral biases, what you should do is delete the app. Just get rid of it. Delete the app. If that's one takeaway from this, make decisions for the long term. Do not, whatever you do, make decisions in the heat of the moment, which could impact your pension scheme over the long term. Don't sell unless you really, really need to. We saw at after COVID that the market was tanking, and the worst time you could have done was when all of that news was being bombarded around you all the time. You couldn't move for negative news. The worst thing you could have done at that point is to sell. So your point about are these 1 in 20 events happening more than 1 in 20 years, it probably seems that way, but there have been market crashes, corrections, call it what you will, at regular intervals over the last, well, forever, really. Think about it, dot-com boom, global financial crisis, COVID. I take your point about three big events in the last 25 years, yeah. But I think that is part of investing. There is risk, and sometimes it is market driven. Mostly it is market driven, and this time it just seems politically driven, which is very unusual. Let's put it that way.
It segues nicely actually into the DC side of things. I mean, I've had friends phone me up. They know what I do, and they respect my view, and they'll ring me up and say, Dave, what should I be doing? You know, and I just, you know, well, I'm not a regulated advisor, but I caution them in the similar way you just have, you know, just, you know, you're 40 years old, delete the app. Yeah, they're not going to do that. You know, sit back, have a cigar, and just wait. There's nothing you can do. There's nothing you can do about this right now, rather than just ride it out.
Exactly.
But I mean, that's very easy. That's quite glib, you know, but for a DC, you know, pension scheme member, it will be a worrying time for them watching their pension fund reduce potentially.
So if you do have an advisor, again, I am not a regulated advisor for individuals, but if you do have an advisor, you know, they will sit you down nicely and say, you do realize that stocks can, shares can go down by 20%, and you nod sagely and say, yes, of course, I know that. I've seen that in the press many, many times. When it happens, again, the behavioral issue is very different. You go, oh my God, I had £100 and now I've got 80. What should I do? I should move. I should do something. Mm. And you call up whoever it is and move my money around, go from US to UK and vice versa and all that kind of stuff. Make decisions, stick by them. If the market has gone down by 10-20% or so, you are a long-term investor. You drip feed money every month probably into that. So think of it logically, you are buying more units than you were a month ago from your monthly contributions. It's very different if you are just about to retire. But even then, if you are targeting an annuity, you should have been lifestyling. So your pension scheme should have been lifestyling and reducing risk, moving away from equities into fixed income, government bonds and corporate bonds. And if you are targeting a drawdown, if you're 65, hopefully you have another 20 years to live, and your money will be invested to and through retirement. So it does seem a bit glib, but don't worry. It happens. Markets are currently back to where they were 12 months ago. So it is always disappointing to say, if only I'd sold at the peak. Nobody knows when the peak is. Nobody knows when the trough is. Mm. But keep invested. If you are, like you say, 40, whatever age, just drip feed money into your defined contribution pot. And hopefully, when you retire in 10, 20, 30 years' time, things will be forgotten. This issue will have been forgotten.
Okay, Matthew, time is pushing against us. So just any closing thoughts from our conversation?
So the main thing is... look at your portfolio. Don't act with haste. Make sure that you make decisions which stand the test of time. It is very difficult to do that when markets are volatile and you're being bombarded with information. But take a step back, look through this, and look at, if you're a long-term investor, remember that you are a long-term investor. You are not a trader. I don't usually do quotes, but I would like to end with a particular quote from Vladimir Lenin, which obviously I read a lot of his being a capitalist. There are decades where nothing happens, and there are weeks when decades happen. And I think that kind of encapsulates the last week or so.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Thank you, Matthew, for your time talking through us. So we were talking through this, I'm going to sort of timestamp it a little bit. So this was sort of the morning of the 9th of April. So who knows what happened between now and when we released this. But this was all fair and true as at the 9th of April, 2025. Okay, thank you, Matthew.
Thank you.